Hi, I'm Becky McRae, and this is A Positive View of Rural. Today we are talking with Mark Riffey. Mark, tell folks who you are, what you do, where you live.
Well, hi, Becky. It's great talking to you today. I come to you from beautiful downtown Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is a town of about 70,000 in the northwest corner of Arkansas.
It's a big town.
Yeah, it's the home of the University of Arkansas. And, you know, it's a big town compared to a lot of rural places. When I lived in Montana, Missoula was a big town, and Missoula and Fayetteville are actually about the same size. So that's kind of an interesting parallel, both college towns. And what I do is kind of a mix of all sorts of things, like lots of people in rural towns. I help small businesses grow, get more customers, become more profitable. Become more productive so that profitable and hours worked per day or week don't necessarily tie together. And I spend a fair amount of time working with small software companies, companies kind of like the one that I started back in 98 and was started so that I could move to a small town. I met an older gentleman in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And we spent about 7 years looking at small towns between Durango and Canada. We just went up the Front Range, and on vacation every year we would check out the mountain towns and pick one out where we wanted to raise our kids. Our kids were very young at the time. And during a week in Jackson, I ran into this realtor who had moved to town in the 60s with his kids in his station wagon and $200. And he sat down and he took me to lunch, and he said, "Son, if you're wanting to move to the mountains, you got to bring two things. You got to bring your own job and your own woman, because we don't have enough of either one."
Oh, man.
So I took him to heart. I already had the family lined up, so that wasn't much of a challenge. But I took him to heart and went back home and decided, okay, I've got to bring my own job. So 3-4 years later, had a software company in place, and moved to Columbia Falls, Montana, which is a town of about 4,000, about 20 miles from Glacier Park. So lived there until last October, so about 4.5 months ago, and just moved back down to Fayetteville, where I went to school, to get a little closer to family and some college friends and things like that. Since I'm an old guy in my 50s, then my parents are slightly older than me, so it made sense to be closer to them so that if I need to help them out with something, I can.
So you moved from the great snowy and cold north down to the balmy south, where it has since been incredibly cold and incredibly snowy. So we can blame you for all the bad weather, right?
My father-in-law has been blaming me all winter. He said I brought it with me.
I see, at least now we know whose fault it is. So you have for a long time, I mean, you're kind of a small town guy, but you've long worked with small businesses that are based in small towns. And so I'm a big collector of what is it that we do right in small towns? What is it that small businesses in small towns that is part of our strength that gives us an advantage when we go out into the world?
You know, I think one of the things we do is we mosey. And we make eye contact. You know, when you're in the airport in a big city and you just kind of sit down and you watch folks, they'll walk by each other and they'll almost try to avoid making eye contact, unless they're a salesperson. And salespeople are kind of out of that mode. They know they need to make eye contact, so they just do it naturally. Small business owners tend to do it naturally. But, you know, that's kind of a survival skill, I think. We take a little longer. You know, we go to the grocery store for three things and we're there for an hour because, not because we shopped a whole lot, but because we ran into three or four people from around town that we had to have a 15 or 20 minute conversation with.
You know, I once read a great networking tip for big cities that you can manufacture a Starbucks moment, which is where you find out what Starbucks your target goes to, and then you go stake out their Starbucks until they show up, and then you could go, oh, you just happened to come in, and it's called manufacturing a Starbucks moment. And I'm thinking, in a small town, we just go to the grocery store, we hop by the post office, we go hang out around town. You can run into just about anybody if you just know the, just get out. You have to get out and put yourself out there.
Absolutely.
So do you have any things that we do wrong in small towns that you think that we need to work on? That you see businesses messing up all the time?
You know, a lot of it is thinking that we don't have to be involved in this big, fancy, shiny internet thing as much as we could be. We don't necessarily need to be involved in social media or have a website. I mean, there's still, if you go to the Google site that keeps track of those things, the percentage of small businesses that don't have a website is still ridiculously incredibly high. And you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that I want to sell milk and cookies on my website, but it just means that if somebody coming through town wants to find you, they can. They want to know if you're open, they can find that out without stopping and getting out of the car and walking up to the door, where they still may not find that information. When I lived in Montana, 3 months of the year, it was a little crazy because we were right outside of Glacier National Park, where 3 million people a year come through. And the other 9 months of the year, you could, except for about 5 minutes a day in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening, you could pretty much cross the street almost without looking. And when we moved there, there was one stoplight. Now there's five, but still. The thing about that is that people from around town know what your hours are, for the most part. But a tourist coming through town, you know, they've been driving for, well, if you're going to Montana, you know, they've been driving for days, and they just want to eat, or they just want to pull over and get diapers, or they just want a map, or whatever they want. And if they are driving and they're in unfamiliar territory, they don't have the information they need, whereas if somebody else in the car has a smartphone, they can pull that stuff up and say, you know, it's 3 miles down on the right, no problem. And, you know, that's how businesses stay in business, especially in rural towns, especially in tourist towns. The locals are certainly critical, but you know, getting a bump from that random traffic coming through is huge. You never know where it's going to take you.
We all have more tourism-based business than we realize. I don't ever think of my big city where my store is located, which is like 8 miles away from me, is the big town. But we don't think of that as a tourist town usually, because we don't have a lot of tourist. We don't have Glacier National Park next door, so we don't think of ourselves as a tourism town. But there's a lot of people. Even if your town has nothing else, people come and visit family in your town. There are people visiting for some reason in your town, and they don't know anything about you and your business. And every business out there, if you're the kind of business that people walk up to, your business has a Google profile right now. There's a Google Place for your business, and you can go in there and add additional information. It will not cost you anything to add your hours, to make sure that there's a link to your website if you have one. If you don't have a website, that can fill in for a lot of your information, but you have to go and do the work of adding the additional information that's not included in the basic, like it has your phone number, but they don't know what hours you're open until you tell them. So if you'll just go do those basic things, that will help a lot in terms of helping the people that are on their phone while driving through town, just trying to figure out where they can get a bottle of liquor or buy anything that it is that they need when they're driving through town.
It's huge. And even for non-tourist business, if somebody's new to town, I mean, even, you know, I hadn't lived in Fayetteville for over 30 years. So, you know, it's hard to be 29 and live in town, not be, you know, be gone for that long, but I pull it off. So I come back to town and I don't know where anything is anymore. You know, some of my old hangouts are here, but a lot of things have changed. I mean, especially in this area, you know, with J.B. Hunt and Tyson and Walmart, a lot of things have changed. And, you know, I pull up Google Maps and, you know, the people that get my business when I'm looking for those kind of things are the people that are on that map, because I can find them.
Absolutely. And it's true in much smaller communities than that.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the other thing that occurs to me with that is there's a belief that everybody that's in town knows where we are. And I don't think that's true. I had a nice guest post from the retail doctor, and he pointed out that they just ran a survey. They took a local business, and they just went and walked the houses within a one-mile distance of that business and said, you know, are you familiar with the business? And something like 70-80% of the other businesses, the residents, had never heard of that business that's within a mile of their house. It's surprising what people do not know that's right around them. So if you really, if you want to be found, you have to make yourself findable.
No question about it. We, you know, we get into ruts. It's easy to go to this store and that store and this store and not look to the right because we're turning left and not notice that that new cupcake shop is there or that new, you know, whatever it is.
You know, a used car dealership opened in my town, and I had no idea. I drove out west of town and went, when did this open up? You know, these things happen. Let's talk a little about our obligation in small towns. I think that you kind of got on your soapbox about this lately and have been thinking a little bit about our obligations as business people and what we do in our communities.
Yeah, you know, this kind of infects isn't the right word, but it kind of infects my thought about small businesses in general. And I talked to the software guys in particular about this because they tend to have employees that are above the normal pay scale, perhaps, for at least for a service or a retail business in a lot of cases. And what I tell them is, you know, you have an obligation to your town, and you might not think of it that way, but employers who treat their employees well have employees who treat their customers well. And, you know, you want that to happen to your business. That's not so much about your town as it is about your company. But customers are, and employees who are treated well just have happier lives. A business with happy, loyal customers is going to grow, and it's going to be more stable. And a more stable business is going to have fewer employees who are stressed about their job security. And if you look back at why problems happen in the home and why problems happen in communities, a lot of it ultimately will go back to financial issues, job security issues, and things like that. You know, if people are not as stressed about their job, then they're less likely to manifest that at home or in the community. And, you know, maybe it makes them a better parent. Maybe it makes them a better spouse. Maybe it makes them a better friend. Maybe it does all those things. Makes them a better community member. And if all those things are happening, then how could you not help but have a better community?
You know, and this is it all makes sense. It sounds perfectly logical to say if you treat your employees well and if you are making sure that you fulfill your obligations to treat other people well, then it will reward your business and it will ultimately reward your community. That sounds like it makes sense. The great thing is the research is there as well. Charles Tolbert out of Baylor University did a lot of research on this question and found that your locally owned independent businesses who treat their employees well are the people who are that are supporting your community and improving the average income levels, the poverty levels, the dropout rates and high school graduation and completion rates are better in communities where you have more locally owned independent businesses. So it's not just that you think this, Mark, and that I think this, but the research is there as well.
You know, I've got a story about a mom that I hired when I had the software company back in Columbia Falls. She's a single mom at the time. She's married now, but she had three kids, and they were all in either elementary school or junior high. And she had been working for one of the large tech support organizations that tends to place themselves in rural communities. And, you know, those guys don't pay very well, but they were pretty good, you know, because they serve Microsoft and HP and so forth. They did a really good job of training their people, and they tended to provide pretty good benefits. And one of the ones in our area, I don't know if they lost their contract with HP or Microsoft or whoever, but something happened and they kind of disappeared. So there was all these people in town that had these skills, and all of a sudden there was this richness of people getting local jobs at better pay that were, you know, they were trained. It was pretty awesome. Well, we had an opening, and I stumbled across one of these folks, and she came in, and she almost seemed embarrassed to tell me that she really needed to make $9 an hour. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry, but we've budgeted 12, and I'm afraid that's what we're going to have to pay. And, you know, for us, that that wasn't a huge issue for us. That was where we were going to start her. So we moved her into a tech support role, and she did really well at that. She had the gift of gab, so we started having her do little add-on sales. And before long, she was the best upseller in the company. And I sold that business in 2006, and she's still with the company that bought it. And I saw her last spring at the grocery store in one of those conversations that we were talking about earlier. And she told me that she was selling $50,000 worth of software per month. So she's come a long way. And that's the kind of stuff that happens when you find somebody that's got a little bit of skill or a little bit of ambition, and they're willing to take everything you hang in front of them and run with it.
But it starts with you making the investment in that person. It started with the fact that you chose to hire her and to make an investment to see that she had potential and to care that she developed as an employee and as a person, so that it was good for both of you.
Well, it was partly us, and it was partly the company that came to town and trained her, but you know, an awful lot of it was her too. So, you know, it's a good thing.
Definitely, definitely. So tell me this. The name of the show is Positive View of Rural. What gives you in spite of all the negative things that we hear, what gives you a positive view of the future of rural?
You know, rural people just, they care about where they live, and they care about the people where they live, and they reward those people with business and referrals and a pat on the back, and you know, in a small town, we used to talk about, my kids were on swim team, and we would drive ridiculous hours across the state of Montana to go to a little town and swim for the weekend and drive back. And the kids all knew that every parent in town was their parent, because nothing escapes the view of every parent, even though some things escape the view of your parent. And, you know, that seems to be kind of how the communities take care of themselves as well. Not so much in a busybody respect, but in a, you know, I found this on the side of the road, and I know it probably belongs to so-and-so, or so-and-so might know whose it is, or you see a door open that shouldn't be open, and you drive by, so you take 5 seconds, and you pull over, and you check and make sure that there's not a bad reason for that door to be open. Little things like that. We had a guy that tried to break into our office one time, and the light was on inside, and the police officers drove by and noticed somebody messing with the door, and he knew that I was rarely in the office that late, so he just stopped and said, "Hey, what you doing?" And you know, those things aren't as easily noticed in a big town where there's lots more people and things like that. So, you know, I think it's all about taking care of each other.
I love it. That's a great reason. That's a great reason. Mark, thanks so much for taking time to talk to me today.
Oh, happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on.